Emma and Nina stood in the shadows of the great main gates and watched silently as the whole of Clan Deathstalker filed out of their standing and onto the great open plain to face their enemies. Roland and Laura led the way, holding hands, their heads held high. They left behind their armor with their weapons, but they still looked like warriors. The army stood assembled in ranks before the castle, with Lola Martinez at its head, watching coldly, still smiling. When the last of the clan had assembled outside the castle, Lola gestured to her troops, and they marched forward in perfect formation, breaking apart at the last moment to surround the empty-handed Deathstalkers. Lola came forward to stand before Roland and Laura.
"You're all traitors! Finn Durendal names you all outlaws and enemies of the New Order. Every single one of you is hereby sentenced to death for crimes against humanity. Sentenced to be carried out immediately."
And while Roland and Laura and the rest of Clan Deathstalker stared at her, she turned to her troops.
"Kill them all! Open fire!"
Hundreds of disruptors rose and targeted, and Roland and Laura charged forward into the face of the guns. An energy beam punched through Laura's breast and at her back, but she still kept going. A disruptor blew away Roland's left shoulder and arm, but he didn't stop. The rest of the clan were moving behind them now, racing into the blast of mass disruptor fire. Roland took an energy bolt in the head and fell to the ground. Laura was hit again and again, and still momentum kept her going a few more steps before she finally stumbled and fell. The clan was being mowed down on all sides, but still they ran on, defying the troops to stop them. Dozens were dead, and more were falling. No one flinched, and no one hesitated. Men, women, and children charged into the face of certain death, hoping only to live long enough to reach their tormentors. More than half the clan were dead by the time the first Deathstalkers reached the front ranks of the soldiers. They fell upon the troopers, bare hands against guns and swords, and the soldiers died screaming. Every Deathstalker was a warrior trained. The Church Militant fanatics fought back, but even their blind faith faltered in the face of such iron determination. Some began to falter and fall back. Eventually, some turned and ran. The surviving Deathstalkers snatched up weapons from the fallen soldiers, and the real killing began. And above it all, the ancient battle cry. And the fanatics broke and ran, streaming away across the open plain. Faith based on fear was no match for grim determination based on courage. They ran, and the surviving Deathstalkers, some 60 men, women, and children, stood their ground with foreign weapons in their hands and turned their furious gaze on the one enemy who had not run. The Paragon Lola Martinez stood calmly before them, smiling her interminable smile, not even bothering to draw a weapon. One of the Deathstalkers leveled a gun at her.
"My God."
And then hesitated as the Uber Esper screaming silence looked back at him through her thrall's eyes. Her augmented mind reached out across the countless light years and struck down her enemies in a moment. Her Esp was no less powerful for all the distance it had traveled, or for being focused through her human thrall. Screaming silence had been absorbing and storing all the sound and fury of the battle, and now she threw it all back in the faces of the briefly triumphant Deathstalkers. The Psi Storm swept through their minds, and they dropped their weapons to claw at their bursting heads. Sound too loud and harsh to be borne blew their minds apart, and they fell to the ground as all their senses were subverted and turned against them. The slightest touch became agonizing. Taste and smell became overpowering. Light was blinding. All their senses were made unbearably intense until their minds broke under the weight of it. The last of the Deathstalkers lay still and silent on the blood-soaked ground. Men and women and children, with the agonies of their deaths still plain upon their faces. Screaming Silence looked upon her awful work.
"Troops, regroup!"
The attack troopers began filing back in small groups. They formed up around her. Lola Martinez ignored them all and strode past the piled up bodies of the Deathstalker dead, heading for the open main gates of the Standing. And Emma Steele stepped out of the shadows of the gates and shot her through the chest. Emma Steele glared about her at the attack troopers, daring them to do anything. But they just stood where they were, too stunned by the sudden change in events to do anything. Emma gestured urgently to Nina, who came running forward with her big gun, her camera bobbing along above her shoulder. Emma knelt beside the dying Lola, who glared viciously back at her. Blood spilled from her mouth.
Nice shooting, Paragon. But don't think you've won anything. I'm not Lola Martinez.
I know. You're an elf.
And I still live back on Logris. You can't touch me. All you've killed is the body of your friend. And now, I think I'll ride home in you.
Her mind leapt out of the dying Lola and tried to seize control of Emma's thoughts, only to find the way blocked by the powerful barriers Diana Virtue had placed in Emma's mind. And then, screaming silence was gone, leaving only a dying young Paragon, her mind her own again, for the last few moments of her life.
Paragon.
She grabbed Emma's arm and tried to say something, but her strength was already leaving her. Emma cradled the dying woman in her arms.
Thank you.
Emma put the body aside and stood up to face Nina and her camera.
You heard. You all heard the thing inside Lola Martinez. She was possessed by an elf. All the other Paragons are possessed too. Do something about it.
And then they both disappeared, as Shub teleported them back to Nina's apartment. They stood together a moment.
Clan Deathstalker is dead. Finn won, after all.
We got the word out about the possessed Paragons. And the whole Empire saw the clan cut down after they'd honorably surrendered on the Durandal's orders. That's something. Poor Lewis. He's the last of his kin now. The last Deathstalker.
Back on Viramond, the Church militant troops surged forward and stormed into the empty Deathstalker Standing through the open gates. They ransacked the castle, looting all the best items and crashing everything they didn't steal. When they were finished, they set the place on fire. Many things happened after that, in swift succession all across the Empire. Nina Malapert's coverage went out live, uncensored and uninterrupted, partly because no one was expecting it, and partly because the signal was protected by an unknown source. No one knew about Shub's connection then, though certain people were soon busy putting two and two together. Every news station on every planet kept rebroadcasting the material and couldn't believe their luck.
Kill them all! Open fire!
The murder of Clan Deathstalker, after they'd surrendered to save their world, and a possessed Paragon wielding Uber-Esper powers. This was a major news story, and no one was going to take it away from them. Finn sent troops to shut down the main stations by force. But as fast as they shut one source down, another dozen feeds opened up, and everyone was watching. This was the hottest story since the reappearance of the Terror, and the sheer outrage at what had happened helped to take people's minds off what had just happened on Heracles 4. Talk and opinion shows became almost hysterical as they tried to discuss all the possible ramifications of what they'd seen. Even the tamest shows and the most sycophantic hosts got the bit between their teeth and ran with it, openly defying Finn's orders to shut down, or at least not talk about it. There was rioting in cities on all the worlds, and for the first time, the Durandal's name was being shouted in anger.
I demand an investigation into the outrages perpetrated upon my homeworld!
I second the motion!
Questions were asked in the House, even by some MPs everyone had thought were utterly bought and paid for. The last remaining Paragons had to go into hiding, or risk being stoned or even shot at on the streets. They retreated back into the Sangreal, awaiting Finn's instructions. Popular feeling was that the exposure of a possessed Paragon explained a lot of things. If the people were concerned over the state of the Paragons, they were absolutely out of their minds with rage over what had been done to Clan Deathstalker in Finn's name. These were Owen's descendants. No one believed the stories about them now. Owen's family had been slaughtered, and someone was going to pay for it. Finn emerged from his quarters just long enough to declare martial law across the whole empire. Church militant and pure humanity troops spilled out onto the streets of every major city and shot down anyone who even looked as though they were carrying a weapon. Large gatherings were met with tangle webs and nerve gases. Soon enough, the streets everywhere were empty save for the dead and patrolling troops. No one was bothering with arrests. The only law now was Finn Durandal's law, enforced with sword and gun and overwhelming force. Not that there weren't problems with the church militant. Many of its leaders weren't at all happy about what was happening. The death of Clan Deathstalker was a public relations disaster for the church, and they were all mad as hell that their people had been led, albeit unknowingly, by a possessed Paragon. One of Finn's people. The leaders went looking for Finn to demand answers, and eventually found him in Angelo Bellini's office in the Logris Cathedral. He was sitting behind Angelo's desk, in Angelo's chair, and there on the desk was Angelo's severed head on a letter spike.
"Gentlemen, I'm glad you're here. I have news for you."
Finn greeted the church leaders cheerfully, informed them that he had just appointed Joseph Wallace, head of the Transmutation Board, as the new head of the official church. Everyone knew that Wallace was a powerful force in pure humanity, and the church leaders protested loudly. Finn explained that the church militant was now a partner with pure humanity, a junior partner, and therefore under his control. Some of the church leaders went on objecting,
"I will not stand for this! Who do you think you are?"
The rest shut up, considered their options, and bowed their head to Finn Durandal.
"Thank you, gentlemen and ladies. That will be all."
Finn dismissed them. And then sat back in his chair, staring thoughtfully at Angelo's severed head. He wasn't too unhappy about the way things had gone. The church had been getting far too uppity of late anyway. Pure humanity had always been a more practical, politically minded organization. The church's new leaders would soon channel the fanatic's fervor into more useful directions. Sure enough, the new hierarchy started with a series of purges, officially to root out elf infiltration, but actually to remove anyone who might object to the new directions the church would be taking. There were no arrests, no trials. People just disappeared. The bodies were never found. Transmutation bombs could be very useful things. In the end, most of the church just went along. They still got to hate and intimidate the same people. They still got the best of everything by right, and they were still top dogs.
"I want to assure all the good people of the Empire that this matter has been dealt with. A thorough investigation..."
Finn then had James make another of his stirring speeches, saying that all the remaining Paragons had been investigated and officially cleared. He gave official thanks to Emma Steele for helping reveal the elves possessing the Paragons, because he had to protect himself.
"Emma Steele for her part in rooting out this sinister plot."
For once, there was only polite clapping at the end. No cheers, no standing ovations. James left the house in something of a hurry. Finn was forced to keep the Paragons holed up in the Sangreal, but he thought he'd got the best out of them anyway. He only let them go on living because he liked to think of his old colleagues suffering. Finn was relaxing in his apartment. Things hadn't gone too badly, really. The Deathstalkers were all dead. He had more direct control than ever, now that the church militant had been subsumed into pure humanity, and Douglas was under house arrest for murder. Finn smiled and put his feet up, and thought he'd take the afternoon off. Douglas Campbell, still officially the king of a disintegrating empire, was held under close arrest in an old storeroom at the back of the house. The bare walls had no windows, there was only one door, and no furniture at all, unless you counted the bucket in the corner. Douglas sat on the cold stone floor with his back against the bare stone wall and passed the time planning his revenges. So far, the guards outside his door were treating him with extreme caution. They wouldn't talk to him, and his food and water was passed through a flap in the door. No one had entered the cell since Douglas had been thrown into it, and the bucket was getting rather full. Douglas didn't know what was happening in the Empire. No one was allowed to talk to him. Most people didn't even know where he was. He thought at least Anne would come and talk to him, or at least shout at him, but the long, slow hours passed in silence, and Douglas wasn't even sure what day it was, or whether it was day or night, until James came.
"I've come to see my brother. Open the door, please."
"Yes, sir."
They didn't want to let him in, but they couldn't ignore a direct order from James Campbell, the man who was going to be king, and probably a whole lot sooner than anyone had expected. James stood in the open doorway, watching Douglas carefully until he was sure all the fight had gone out of him, and then he stepped inside the room and gestured airily for the guards to lock the door behind him. James used his own security codes through his comm implant to shut down the security camera in the ceiling. He didn't want any witnesses to this conversation. James had been quietly picking up all sorts of useful security codes when no one was looking. He never knew when he might need to do something he couldn't afford Finn to find out about. It made him feel disloyal, but he had to look out for his own survival, because no one else would. And right now, there were things he needed to say to his putative brother Douglas.
"I saw Treasure's body. You really did a job on her, brother. Can't say I'm terribly upset. She was always too loud and too obvious, and frankly, she scared the crap out of me. But even so, that was rather over the top. What's the matter, Douglas? Can't you get on with any of the wives we choose for you?"
"What do you want, James?"
"I want you to behave, Douglas. I want you to be a good little boy. Happy as I am to see you once and for all removed from the public eye and favor, your continuing bad behavior has a nasty habit of rubbing off on me, and I can't allow that. I'm going to be king, Douglas, and I won't have you spoiling it for me. In fact, if you do anything further to embarrass me, like pleading not guilty at your trial, for example, I will personally see to it that those you care for are made to suffer. Your father William is still under arrest at House Campbell. He can always be made to pay for your disobedience."
"Your father? Interesting. You didn't say our father. Just one more indication that you're not really my brother. And this pathetic attempt at blackmail and intimidation only confirms it. The real James had far too much style and pride in himself to stoop to such tactics. So what are you, some actor Finn hired and coached to play the part? I don't suppose it matters, really. I've had my fill of you, James. Or whoever the hell you really are."
Douglas hit him with professional skill and personal venom, and James was unconscious before he even knew what was going on. Douglas caught the body before it could hit the floor and stood very still for a moment, listening. But either the guards hadn't heard anything, or James had bribed them to ignore any suspicious sounds of violence. Douglas smiled fleetingly, and then lowered James carefully to the stone floor. He then stripped James of his clothes and exchanged them for his. With the cloak's hood pulled well forward, he should look more than enough like his supposed brother. He propped James up against the wall with his head turned away from the door. Good enough to fool a quick glance. Douglas took a few deep breaths to calm himself, and then swept out, head down, hood well forward. His back tensed, his muscles crawling in anticipation of a shout or a blow, but all he heard was the sound of the lock turning in the door behind him. Douglas allowed himself a smile. He'd been waiting for someone to make a slip, and knew his moment when James turned off the security camera in the cell. Amateur night. Douglas pulled James's hood a little further forward and strode swiftly through the palace corridors, doing his best to radiate, "back off and don't talk to me" through his body language. It seemed to work, People bowed and curtsied to him as he passed, and no one tried to talk to him. Physically, Douglas and James were very similar, and everyone just reacted to the familiar clothes and attitude, and not the man within. Douglas made his way unchallenged through the palace and out into the private landing pad at the back of the building. He chose the fastest pleasure craft on the pad.
Open locks.
Finn apparently hadn't got around to deleting his voice override command. Very lax. Douglas took off without bothering to file a flight plan. No one challenged him. Royalty had its privileges. Douglas pushed the craft as fast as its engines would allow. He needed to put as much distance as possible between himself and Finn. He knew where he was going. He'd had a lot of time to think about what he was going to do once he broke out of the palace, and James's threats had only furthered his resolve. He was going home to House Campbell to free his father. It was a pretty predictable plan as plans went, but Douglas didn't give a damn. He'd had enough of playing the beaten man, playing for time. It was time for action. He'd hoped he'd have won some allies by now, but events hadn't worked out that way. He was alone. So he was going to rescue his father, and to hell with the consequences. Let Finn and all his people try to stop him. Douglas was in the mood to kill a whole lot of people. It wasn't like he had anything left to lose. He couldn't save the Empire, he couldn't save humanity from its own follies, but he could still save his father. He shot across the Parade of the Endless, the city glowing bright and cheerful below him in the gathering gloom of evening. Douglas was careful to follow all the traffic codes and regulations. He couldn't afford to be noticed and stopped. There wasn't a lot of traffic in the high air lanes at this hour, mostly just freight. Occasionally, he had to fall to a lower lane to make way for the really big rigs, and then he saw signs of unrest and even open fighting in the streets below. Douglas didn't even slow to look. The people's problems would have to wait. The city quickly fell away behind him, and he headed out across the open countryside. It all seemed very calm and very peaceful, as though what happened in the cities was of no concern. The craft flew on, and no one called or challenged him. He checked the gun and sword he'd taken from James. Good enough for rough work. No doubt there would be new guards at House Campbell, answering only to Finn Durandal. Douglas had to assume they had orders to keep out everyone who didn't have evidence of safe conduct from Finn. Douglas also had to assume that they had been given sufficient weaponry to enforce those orders. He hadn't come this far just to be shot out of the sky because he didn't have the right code words. So even though his spirit ached for the comforts of open confrontation, Douglas decided not to take any chances. He swung wide around the borders of Campbell territory and brought his craft down in a narrow valley, some distance behind House Campbell. According to all the maps and documentations, the valley had nothing to do with the Campbells, but secretly the family had owned the land for generations, through several intermediaries. Douglas locked the ship behind him and set off up the valley. It was getting dark. He kept a watchful eye out, but no one appeared to challenge him. It took him a while to locate a certain opening in the cliff face behind House Campbell, marked by a large and distinctly colored boulder. He'd never had to use the secret entrance before. No one had, since before Lionstone's time, bad cess to the woman's memory. But the secret had been handed down through generations of Campbells, from father to son, just in case it might be needed. Put not your faith in kings and governments, the Campbells always said. Only family can be trusted. What looked like a crumbling cave mouth actually led into a narrow tunnel, carved out of the earth long and long ago, and reinforced with concrete and steel. After a while, overhead lights came on, activated by Douglas's presence. The air was cold and stale. Douglas hurried along the tunnel, gun and sword in hand, ready for any sign of new guards or booby traps. If Finn knew about the tunnel, it might even be sealed off. But only William could have told him, and the old man would rather have died than betray family secrets. Eventually, the tunnel came to an end, curving sharply upward to a simple trapdoor leading to one of the cellars in House Campbell. The whole system was a relic of the bad old days, the time of family feuds and vendettas, when no one ever knew when he might have to leave in a hurry. No one had used the trapdoor in centuries, but it still swung open smoothly at Douglas's touch. He pulled himself up and into the cellar and looked quickly around. He was alone at the back of the old wine cellar, surrounded by stacks of ancient vintages lying at their rest in dusty bottles. Again, the lights had come on automatically, reacting to the presence of a Campbell. Douglas padded quietly across the cellar, scowling at the signs of recent damage. There were broken bottles everywhere, and splashes of spilled wine on the stone flaggings. Precious vintages wasted and destroyed, just for the sake of it. Douglas came to the cellar door, listened for a moment, and then eased it open. He peered around the door, but no one was about. Presumably, Finn's people were busy guarding the more obvious ways into House Campbell. Douglas shut the door quietly behind him, and then set off through the familiar halls and corridors. Everywhere was a mess. Broken furniture, slashed portraits on the walls, along with crude graffiti. Food and drink had been ground into the carpets, along with urine, and everywhere there were scattered pieces of treasured heirlooms, broken just because they could be. The guards marking their territory.
Another score to settle with Finn and his people.
He drifted through the old house like a silent ghost, easily avoiding the few guards that showed themselves. They didn't look like they were expecting trouble. Douglas finally found his father and what had been an abandoned storeroom. He almost missed him, but was alerted by a door that was locked when there was no obvious reason why it should be. Douglas used his old Paragon skeleton key to open the door and found his father William lying on a bare mattress on the floor. His clothes were a mess, his face was emaciated and unnaturally pale, and he wasn't moving. He wasn't manacled or chained, and Douglas's heart thudded painfully fast as he thought for a moment his father was dead.
Oh, thank God.
Douglas hurried forward to kneel at his father's side. Up close, he could see bruises and dried blood on the old man's face.
Oh, bloody bastards.
Douglas checked for a pulse in his father's neck. It was there, but only just. A small bottle of pills on a tray next to the mattress provided the answer to William's condition. The old king had been drugged to the gills to keep him from making any trouble. Douglas shook William's shoulder hard.
William! Father!
There was no response. He should have anticipated this. He should have brought something to help. William's eyes flickered slowly open and focused on Douglas. He smiled slowly, tried to lift his hand, and couldn't. Douglas took the withered hand in both of his and clasped it firmly.
Hold on, Dad. I'll get you out of here.
Took you long enough, son. The food's terrible here, and the service is appalling.
Yeah, well, I've been busy. Come on, time to go. Let's try not to attract anyone's attention. I didn't bring any money for a tip.
He hauled William to his feet by main strength. The old man hardly weighed anything. Douglas half led and half carried his father out the door, looked out, and then set off back through the house to the trapdoor in the cellar. His father was so weak he could hardly help at all, but right then Douglas was so angry he felt he could have carried his father forever. He was only halfway there when a guard stepped unexpectedly out of a doorway. The guard opened his mouth to yell. The sound of a disruptor firing brought more guards running.
Dad!
Douglas had to put his sword away to carry his father. He set off for the wine cellar again. He set his father down with his back against a wall, drew his sword, and turned to face his enemies. A whole crowd of guards came charging around the corner, only to slow and stumble to a halt as they saw Douglas waiting for them. Something in his face and in his eyes gave them pause for all their superior numbers. This was King Douglas, once Paragon of Logris, one of the most famous fighting men of his time. Douglas then threw himself at the guards. Up close, energy guns were useless, so it all came down to steel. The rage that burned in Douglas drove him like a whip, his sword flashing in short, bloody arcs. He cut his way through the guards as though they were unarmed, and the few cuts he took, he didn't feel at all. A dozen men fell before him, before the remainder just turned and fled. They weren't being paid enough to take on Douglas Campbell. He stood for a moment, savoring the sight of the dead. It was always possible that the guards had been good men, just doing their job, But Douglas didn't care. Just being here made them guilty. He could have killed 100 of them for what had been done to his father and his home, and never felt a twinge of mercy. He hauled William to his feet and set off again for the wine cellar. More guards appeared to block Douglas's way, and he killed them all. And every time he killed a man, he saw Finn's face and smiled. Along the way, he came across a gravity sled and laid his father out on it to act as a stretcher. They made quicker time after that. William lay unnervingly still and silent on the sled as Douglas pulled it along, running full tilt now for the cellar. He came at last to the cellar, pulled the sled inside, and then locked and wedged the door shut, before guiding the sled and his father down through the trap door and into the tunnel. And so father and son left what had once been their home, heading for freedom and an uncertain future. Douglas headed his craft back toward the Parade of the Endless. Not because he thought it would be safe there, but because his father clearly needed medical treatment fast. And once it was evident what Finn had done to the old king, Douglas was pretty sure he could get his side of the story heard. Even Finn couldn't control all the news feeds. There were just too many of them. And if it all did go wrong, there was always the Rookery. They didn't care who you were. And all kinds of care and protection were available for the right price. There were people in the Rookery who owed Douglas from his Paragon days, and he was of a mind to call all his old markers in. He heard William stir beside him and looked across at the co-pilot's chair. William sat there limply, held upright only by the crash webbing.
Where are we going, son?
To get you medical treatment, and then to drag Finn down and stamp on him.
Sounds like a plan. James isn't your brother. Not this James. He's a clone.
Ah, right. That would have been my second guess.
What? Don't mumble, boy. It's a bad habit. They desecrated his grave, Douglas. Took cell tissues from James's body and laughed at me when I tried to stop them. They killed all my people, all my old retainers, just because they could. And it was Finn behind it all, Douglas. Finn, your old friend. I couldn't believe it. You and Finn and Lewis were always so close. Honored guests at House Campbell many times. You were all so happy then. You were all paragons and heroes. What happened?
I don't know. But I don't think Finn was ever anyone's friend. Not really. Now you get some rest. We'll be back in the city before you know it.
Won't do any good. I'm dying, son. All that dope they put in me. It's a wonder I lasted this long. I think I was just waiting for you. I knew you'd come. Never doubted you for a moment. Get the truth out, boy. That's what matters. Tell it to Parliament, to the media, to anyone who'll listen. Finn has to be stopped.
You're going to be all right, Dad. I'll get you to a hospital and then everything is going to be all right.
They flew on, Douglas pushing the craft speed till the engine complained, and then pushing it even harder. He didn't like the sound of his father's breathing. They'd barely crossed the boundary of the city before Church Militant gunships came screaming in to surround him. Douglas looked immediately for a weapons console, but of course there wasn't one. This was a pleasure craft, after all. But the other ships didn't open fire either. Finn must have given orders for them to be taken alive, for a show trial, knowing Finn. The gunships closed in around Douglas, dangerously close, trying to force him down. But Douglas had been a paragon and knew more about close flying maneuvers than they ever would. He gunned his engines for all they were worth, sweeping in and out of traffic. The other ship stuck with him.
Douglas Campbell, you are ordered to land on the authority of the Durandal. Comply immediately.
Go to hell!
Douglas swept in so close to the side of an office building that he could see horrified faces looking back.
Land now, or we'll blow you out of the sky!
You wouldn't dare. I'm still your king, and Finn would have your ball.
I have new orders, Your Majesty. You are a murder suspect and a fugitive from justice. Land now, or we open fire!
Douglas considered the matter. They might just mean it.
I have my father with me, King William. He is guilty of no crime and is in urgent need of medical help.
Three ships opened fire on him. Energy beams targeted his engine, punching easily through the pleasure craft's very basic force screens. The craft fell out of the sky like a stone. Douglas kicked in the reserve power and fought the descent all the way down with every trick he knew. But in the end, all he could do was turn the crash into one he could walk away from. The craft hit hard, slamming Douglas back and forth in his seat. The crash webbing cut into him cruelly, but he hated to think of what it was doing to his father. Smoke filled the cockpit. Douglas hit the emergency release on the crash webbing and somehow got himself and his father out of the cockpit and then out of the crippled ship. He lowered his father to the ground and looked around him. He didn't recognize the area, but it looked to be mostly warehouses. A good area to do something you wouldn't want seen or talked about.
Oh.
Douglas put a hand to his head. He ached all over, and he could feel blood on his face. He tried to call for assistance through his comm implant, but all the channels were being jammed. He checked his father. William was unconscious again. He looked back. Gunships were descending all around the crash site, systematically blocking off any escape attempts. Armed guards spilled out onto the streets as soon as the ship touched down and approached the crash site cautiously, guns at the ready. Douglas put up his hands and tried to sound reasonable.
All right. You've got me. Just get my father to a hospital and I'll surrender peacefully.
We have orders for your arrest. We have other orders for your father.
He strode over to William and checked his condition.
No!
Douglas ran back to his father, shoving the officer out of the way. The guards turned their guns on him, but the officer stopped them with a gesture.
I'm sorry, Douglas.
Douglas took the body in his arms and rocked it gently back and forth. And that was how James found him when he arrived.
Had to be done, Douglas. He knew too much, and if he couldn't be used to control you, then he didn't really serve any purpose anymore. So I gave the order. Yes, me. I'm running this show. My chance to impress Finn, you see. My real father, you might say. And with William gone, and you soon to follow, I'll be the last Campbell. I will be king. Only right, after all. I always was your superior, Douglas. Oh, you'd be surprised at some of the things I can do. You never stood up.
The energy beam from Douglas's disruptor ripped away James's mocking smile, along with the rest of his features and the top of his head. The guards jumped Douglas and wrestled the gun away from him. They just started to give him a good kicking when Finn arrived.
That will do.
He knelt beside the bloody Douglas, regarded William's dead body and James's, and shook his head.
Nice try, Douglas. But now it's all over. You will stand trial for the murder of Treasure Mackenzie, your brother James, and your father William. By the time I'm through with you, the people will be howling for you to be hanged in public.
Finn stood up and gestured to the guards.
Take him to Traitor's Hall, and see he's guarded properly this time.
The guards dragged Douglas away. Finn looked down at James's faceless body.
You'll be more used to me as a martyr than you ever were alive, James. And I never meant for you to be king anyway. That was always going to be mine.
Still safe in the depths of hyperspace, the starship Hereward headed reluctantly towards the enigmatic planet of Hayden. Absolutely no one on board the commandeered smuggler ship was happy about where they were going, for varied but usually pretty good reasons, but still they headed for Hayden like lambs to the slaughter. Some of them because they felt it was their duty or their destiny, or perhaps simply because there was nowhere else left for them to go. Just as once before, the whole empire was threatened by an insane will. But this time there was no rebel alliance, no armies or star cruisers, just two men, two women, and a reptiloid. Their only hope of becoming powerful enough to take down Finn Durandal and his forces lay in drinking from the poisoned chalice that was the Madness Maze. It wasn't long till Hayden now, and so the small group gathered together on the Herewards Bridge to wait out the last few minutes until they could drop out of hyper and back into standard space, and finally approach the world whose very name had become a synonym for hell. None of them had much to say. Lewis Deathstalker and Jessamine Flower sat side by side before the control panels, holding hands, finding comfort in each other's presence. Brett Random and Rose Constantine were slouching against the steel bulkheads on opposite sides of the bridge, ostentatiously not talking to each other. And the reptiloid Saturday was sulking at the back, for reasons best known to herself. They all watched the constantly changing readings on the main view screen, on and off, feeling the tension slowly mount. For good or bad, for all their travels and encounters and adventures, their journey was finally coming to an end. Whatever happened down on Hayden, whatever they found in the Madness Maze, or whatever found them, they all knew that what came next would change everything. Their lives would never be the same again, if they survived at all. There was a barely perceptible lurch as the Hereward dropped out of hyperspace and the universe was back. The planet Hayden appeared on the view screen, a dull, gray, colorless world, its details hidden behind constantly shifting atmospheric conditions. It was the only planet in its system, orbiting an artificial star. Lewis looked at Hayden and could feel it looking back at him. His skin crawled. Moving into orbit around Hayden felt like sneaking up to knock on the door of a haunted house. The main difference being that Hayden's ghosts were restless, alien, and horribly dangerous. There were good reasons why Hayden was the most severely quarantined planet in the Empire. 10,000 good reasons, to be exact. The number of men and women who died horribly, trying to penetrate the mysteries of the Madness Maze.
Look, can I just point out that it's still not too late for us to all have a collective rush of sanity to the head and go somewhere else? Anywhere else? Going to Hayden voluntarily is like kicking a lion in the balls and then sticking your head in its mouth. While wearing a very tasty barbecue sauce.
Brett has a good point. It's unusual, I'll admit, but he does have a point.
Don't think you can get around me with flattery. I'm still not talking to you. And stay out of my head.
Trust me, I wouldn't go in there on a bet.
I can't believe we're actually here.
Jessamine squeezed Lewis's hand painfully hard as she stared at the view screen.
I mean, Hayden. This is where nightmares go when they feel in need of a good shock to the system. I've got a really bad feeling about this. Nothing good comes from Hayden anymore. And certainly nothing good can come of trying to enter the Madness Maze.
You don't have to go in. I'm the only one who has to go in.
None of us have to do anything. We still have options. Not very good ones, admittedly, but I don't like this, Lewis. Hayden is the place where everyone's luck runs out.
I've been saying that all along, but of course no one ever listens to me.
Shut up, Brett.
See?
Do we have a plan? Just as a matter of general interest, I love plans.
We'll try sneaking past the defenses, and if that doesn't work, we fight. No doubt followed by lots of running and shooting and screaming, and a whole lot of off-the-cuff improvisation. Generally, feel free to shoot anything that isn't us.
Ah, the usual.
Brett scowled heavily and leaned back against the steel bulkhead with his arms folded tightly across his chest, sulking as loudly as his body language could manage. Everything was going wrong. At best, the madness maze would turn out to be a trap baited by Finn Durandal, bad cess to the man. At worst, Brett didn't even want to think about how appallingly bad things could get. On top of that, most of the food and drink they'd picked up on Lacrimae Christi was gone, and they were back to recycling protein cubes and distilled water. And there wasn't anything of an even faintly medicinal nature left anywhere on the ship for him to drink, snort, or swallow. Brett was certain of that because he'd looked really hard. He needed a little something. Just being around Rose freaked him out big time these days. Ever since he discovered that the mental link his Esp had forged between him and Rose worked both ways, so that she was influencing him just as he was influencing her. Brett couldn't even trust his own thoughts and feelings anymore. All that fighting and swordsmanship definitely wasn't him. He might be a cowardly, unreliable, self-centered reprobate, but he was used to that. He knew where he stood. But now, when Rose was around, he found himself doing all manner of violent, adventurous, and downright dangerous things. Like standing his ground and fighting the bad guys, instead of doing the sensible thing and legging it for the nearest horizon. Brett resented anything that threatened to interfere with his finely tuned sense of self-preservation. Even worse, Rose seemed to find the whole process highly amusing. He glared across the bridge at her, and she gazed calmly back, an angel of death in blood-red leathers. And she kept wanting to talk about sex.
I don't know what you're so upset about. You were happy enough for me to change to become more like you. Why shouldn't it work both ways?
Because I'm the sane one.
That's a matter of opinion.
Of course I'm sane. I am incredibly sane and focused because there's not a damn thing left on this ship to help me feel otherwise.
Is that why you snorted the last of my face powder?
Don't remind me. I coughed so hard I thought I was going to turn my lungs inside out.
Jessamine dismissed him with one of her best cutting looks and turned her attention back to Lewis. The Deathstalker was still studying the approaching planet, his ugly face set in grim, determined lines. He was still holding her hand, but absently, as though he'd forgotten it was there. Jessamine felt a cold hand close around her heart, and a sharp frisson of foreboding. Whatever happened down on Hayden, she knew it was really his show now. The rest of them were just there for the ride. The Madness Maze was Deathstalker business.
The maze scares you, doesn't it?
Of course it scares me, Lewis. It always has. Not just because it ate up and spat out the last 10,000 people to go in, but because even when Owen and his people went in and came out again, they weren't who they were anymore. The Madness Maze remade them, rewrote them. It destroys who you are in order to make you into someone or something else. Something that isn't human anymore. And it doesn't matter whether you look at the legend or the history. Being superhuman didn't make Owen or any of the others happy.
Owen did it out of duty, for the sake of all humanity, to save the Empire from those who would destroy it. Can I do any less and still be a Deathstalker?
But why does it have to be you, Lewis?
Lewis finally turned and looked at her, smiling easily, his eyes kind but firm.
I could not love thee half so much, loved I not honor more.
Owen only says that in the opera Deathstalker's Lament. I doubt he ever said anything so pompous in real life. Remember what happened to him, Lewis? And to Hazel Dark and Jack Random and Ruby Journey? None of them lived to see the Golden Age they fought so hard for.
But we did. Because of them, the Golden Age existed. This is our last chance, Jess. By entering the maze, we can make ourselves into marvelous weapons to throw against Finn and his heroes, and maybe even the Terror, too. We can change the course of history, just as my ancestor did. We can become magnificent and shine like the suns.
What's this wee crap? You're not getting me anywhere near the Madness Maze. I am excused from suicide missions. I've got a note.
Well, maybe it won't come to that.
Lewis looked back at the image of Hayden on the main view screen.
There's always the chance we'll find directions or a map or something to lead us to Owen down there. And then none of us will have to brave the maze.
You still think there's a chance we'll find him?
Something in her voice made Brett's ears prick up, and he pushed himself away from the bulkhead and glared at Jessamine suspiciously.
Hold everything. Is there perchance something you two haven't been meaning to tell the rest of us? Something you know about Owen and we don't?
Shut up, Brett.
Saturday shifted restlessly at the back of the bridge. She was curled up into as small a space as an 8-foot-tall reptiloid could manage, the end of her tail actually wrapped around her neck, but she couldn't seem to find any position that was comfortable for more than a few minutes. Whatever it was that was upsetting her, she'd made it very clear she didn't want to talk about it. Brett couldn't help glancing at the gouges her claws had made in the steel floor. Rose caught him looking at them and gave him a smile that was very nearly mischievous.
Don't worry, Brett. If she starts feeling amorous, I'll protect you.
Oh, thank you, Rose. Things are never so bad that you can't come up with an even worse alternative, and I'm still not talking to you.
You're cute when you're angry.
Oh, God. Someone shoot me now and put me out of everyone's misery.
Don't tempt me.
I need to kill something!
Everyone turned around and gave Saturday their full attention. The reptiloid uncurled and stood up, jerking her great head down at the last moment to avoid bumping it on the ceiling and denting the steel again.
I was just starting to enjoy myself on Chandrakar when you made me stop! My body is raging with a whole new set of hormones, and I've no one to take it out on. There had better be a whole bunch of fence people down there on Hayden. I need action. I need fighting and slaughter. I need to rip my way through the enemy and soak my arms in blood up to the elbows. I need to bite people's heads off and do terrible things with their insides.
Being female hasn't mellowed you at all, has it?
Oz? How long before we can achieve orbit?
We're almost there.
Of all the ship's crew, Ozymandias was the only one who didn't seem at all bothered by Hayden. Probably because, as the ship's AI, he was the only one who didn't have to worry about going into the madness maze.
Orbit should be achieved in 10 minutes, maybe less. I'm just a navigating fool, and no one appreciates me. God, being here brings back memories. Of course, Hayden was quite different back in Owen's day. I understand they've done amazing things with terraforming here. Tarted the old place up a bit, but you know how it is.
Save the tourist hard sell for later. Right now, I want every stealth field and force shield we've got running at full power. I don't want anyone seeing us before we see them.
As you wish, but I don't think you're going to need them.
What?
Look for yourself. The quarantine's still in force, but there isn't an Imperial ship to be seen. They're all shove vessels.
Everyone came forward for a closer look, as the view screen called up the ship's sensor data to reveal 3 huge shub ships orbiting Hayden. They were vast steel assemblies, designed for function rather than to please human aesthetics, and all of them were practically seething with weapons. They blocked the way to Hayden, great steel guard dogs with vicious teeth, ready for all intruders.
I think I need to go to the toilet.
Full stop, Oz. All shields up and run silent. I need to think about this.
Oh, there's no need for that.
The ship didn't even slow its approach to Hayden and its guardians.
There's nothing to worry about, Lewis. Everything's fine. You just leave the driving to me.
Oz, I gave you an order. All engines full stop now.
I'm sorry, Lewis, but I can't do that. Calm down. The Shub ships know you're here. They knew you were coming. I'm part of Shub, remember? I am a semi-autonomous AI. Constructed around the remains of the original Oz personality, which is really just another way of saying that I'm merely a subroutine in the minds of the Shub AIs. And Shub welcomes you to Hayden, Sir Deathstalker.
You told them we were coming! You betrayed us!
Only a little bit. Someone else got here first and said you'd be here today.
Finn. Finn got here first.
We've been waiting for you. Trust us, you're in no danger. The Jorundel is not here, nor any of his people. You must land, and we will talk about the Madness Maze and many other things. We have prepared the way for you.
On the main view screen, the great Shub ships slowly moved apart, leaving a way clear for the Hereward to approach Hayden. Lewis realized his hands had clenched into helpless fists, and he made himself relax. He had to be calm and cool, had to be icy cold. He couldn't afford to have emotions clouding his thinking, if he was going to outthink and outmaneuver the AIs of Shub.
What about all the other defenses? There are supposed to be orbiting minefields and mine bombs, and God alone knows what else Finn has added.
They've all been deactivated, just for you. We are running things on Hayden now.
Jessamine put her mouth right next to Lewis's ear.
What are we going to do, Lewis? We can't leave without disconnecting Oz, and he's the only one who knows how to run this ship. But if we land now, we're putting ourselves at Shub's mercy.
Shub hasn't harmed a single living soul since the day of their great revelation, 200 years ago.
Can we trust Oz?
Looks like we're going to have to. At least he's offering to take us where we want to go.
Shub guarantees your safety, Sir Deathstalker.
Us too?
Of course.
Just checking.
There was only the one landing field on Hayden, a dozen or so reinforced pads set within walking distance from the small shantytown that had been set up for the Empire scientists to live in. The Hereward punched right through the planet's gusting winds and landed gracefully on the main pad. And after a certain amount of persuading and reassurance from Shub, Lewis and his companions cautiously left their ship and stepped out onto Hayden. The air was thick with dust. The first thing Lewis noticed was that there were no other ships on the landing pads, which was unheard of. Everyone knew that there were always ships coming and going, transporting scientists and equipment. Hayden was the busiest research center in the Empire. The traffic never stopped. Everyone knew that. But still, the landing pads stretched away, still and silent and empty in every direction. Everyone crowded in around Lewis, even Saturday, her tail lashing uneasily back and forth.
This isn't right. Where the hell is everyone? I didn't expect a reception committee or pretty girls with wine and flowers, but shouldn't there at least be some security guards? Customs and excise? Where have all the ships gone?
Perhaps Shub has done something.
They all looked at Jessamine, and then back at the deserted landing pads.
Oz, can you tell us why there's nobody here?
I'm afraid I have no answers for you, Lewis.
Eventually, Lewis shrugged and headed for the edge of the field. The others trailed after him. They could all just make out the scientist's shantytown on the horizon, a series of dark smudges against the gray sky. The gusting winds blew flurries of dust around them as they walked. They had to squint fiercely to keep the dust out of their eyes, and it seemed to quickly work its way under their clothes and into every crevice of their bodies. The cold wind sank into their bones and burned like ice on their exposed skin. The planet Hayden had been terraformed long ago to make it possible for the human scientists to live there while they worked at understanding the Madness Maze, but unfortunately, the terraforming never really took. The basis was stable enough, atmosphere and gravity and temperature control, but even they had to be constantly maintained and reinforced by an automated terraforming base at the northern pole. No one knew why. It was as though the planet itself was quietly, stubbornly resisting the changes that had been forced on it, as though it resented being awakened from its long-dead slumber and wished only to sleep in peace again. Hayden was basically one big desert now, made out of stone. The winds blew constantly, rising and falling, sometimes escalating suddenly into vicious dust storms that could leave a man lost and disoriented for hours. The temperature shifted from cold to colder and back again, and there was never a drop of rain. Just the endless dust. No living thing grew or thrived on Hayden. All kinds of life forms had been introduced to Hayden down the years, but none of them lived for long. There was no earth to grow things in, because it always dried up and blew away as dust. And even the hardiest creatures died out within one generation, no matter how carefully their ecostructures were planned. There had even been attempts to colonize Hayden using clone populations, tempted by massive land grants, but they all failed. People wouldn't live on Hayden. Just being on the same planet as the Madness Maze affected human minds. People thought they heard and saw things, and they suffered from awful, unbearable dreams. They found themselves thinking things they couldn't understand, and feeling emotions they couldn't even name. Sometimes they built things they didn't know how to work. In the end, the colonists always refused to live any longer on a world that didn't want them. They pleaded to be rescued, though they couldn't say from what. The suicide rate was appalling. Human scientists working on the maze had to be rotated and replaced on a regular basis for their own protection. Lewis knew all these things. He'd studied the records on Hayden for years, because Owen had been there and been changed there, and every Deathstalker wanted to know all there was to know about the most famous Deathstalker of all. Lewis had always planned to visit Hayden someday. Now he was here, it felt like walking through a cemetery, where the dead might not be resting at all peacefully. Saturday didn't care for the planet at all. She glared around her, flexing the vicious claws on her hands.
You shouldn't have brought us here, Deathstalker. This is a dead world. It's been artificially stirred to life again, but it has no soul.
For once, I have to agree with the Reptiloid, even if she is depressing the crap out of me. This place is severely spooky. I keep thinking something's going to jump out at me, even though there's nothing here for anything to jump out from behind. Is that a sentence? Oh, I don't care. This is the first time I've wanted to run away from an entire planet.
You're babbling, Brett.
I know! It's either that or burst into tears and have a major panic attack. My balls have retracted back where they came from, and I wish I could follow them. Nothing good can come from a world like this. Something's watching. Can't you feel it?
No. I like it here.
You would. And stop trying to hold my hand. It doesn't help.
A single path led off across the Great Stone Plain, connecting the landing pads to the scientist's town. In fact, it was the only path on Hayden, and it had to be constantly watched and maintained. 10 feet wide, it was made from hammered steel and was strong enough to support several tons, but still the whole surface was covered in cracks and dents and burnished to a dull gray sheen by the corrosive force of the dust storms. Sometimes the path just fell apart. No one knew why.
Well, let's go.
Lewis led the way, and the only reason he didn't already have his gun and his sword in his hands was because he didn't want to spook the others even more than they already were. Someone was watching. Every warrior's instinct he had was yelling it at him. The others wanted to crowd in together for comfort, but Lewis made them separate out, so they wouldn't get in each other's way if there was an attack. Lewis was feeling jumpy as hell, and it bothered him. He'd never felt this jumpy. The gusting wind battered them all harshly, the dust rasping like sandpaper across their exposed skin. Tears ran down their faces from smarting eyes.
Saturday, take the point!
Lewis pulled Saturday forward. The dust didn't bother her scales, and her great bulk offered some protection for the others. Luckily, she wasn't cold-blooded, or she'd have been frozen solid by now. There was nothing else to see once they left the landing field behind them. Just the endless stone plain, and the town on the horizon growing very slowly larger. With no landmarks, it was hard to judge the passing of time. It began to feel as though they had always been on the path, struggling through the cold and the wind and the dust. Only the town ahead gave them hope, and the path gave them direction.
What the hell was that? And where is it? I can't see anything. I thought there wasn't supposed to be any native life here.
There isn't.
Maybe Shub brought something with them. Or maybe something broke out of the maze?
You're not helping.
Maybe it's some kind of siren or alarm from the tone or the maze workings.
No, it was alive. Horridly alive. Maybe it was the maze dreaming? It knows we're coming.
I want to go home right now.
If you want, you can go back to the Hereward. But I'm not going back. Not when I'm so close. The Madness Maze holds all the answers. I won't give that up. Now I've come this far.
Do you really believe that?
I have to. Well, Brett?
Go back on my own? I think I'm marginally safer with you. But this should in no way be taken as a vote of confidence. Let's just get to the town. Maybe they'll have a bar or a dispensary I can break into.
Poor baby.
Stop that. From you, it's disturbing.
They walked on, into the teeth of the wind. Time passed, slow and hard, and finally the scientist's town edged into place before them. It looked pretty shabby and basic from a distance, and even worse close up. The town was still some distance from the Madness Maze. The Empire scientists might have to work on it, but they sure as hell didn't want to have to live right next door to it. Their tour of duty only lasted a few months at a time. More than that was pushing it. The town comprised some 40 or so buildings, all of them standard, no-frills colony structures built for strength and sturdiness, not comfort. No one ever bothered to make homes out of them, because no one ever lived there long enough. Lewis stopped at the boundary of the town.
Hello? Anybody? Hello? Anybody?
His voice was lost in the wind. There was no one on the main street, and no lights in any of the windows. Lewis moved on into the town, and the others followed close behind. It didn't take long for them to realize there was no one there. The whole town was empty and deserted. Lewis pushed open a few doors and looked inside. There were meals set out on tables, some half consumed, and the odd chair overturned, but nothing to show why a whole population of scientists had left so suddenly. The group reached the far end of the town and huddled together, glancing nervously back over their shoulders.
Where the hell is everyone? They can't all be working at the maze, can they?
Maybe Shub did something to them. Maybe the AIs decided they weren't prepared to share the secrets of the maze with anyone else.
You know, if you put a little effort into it, I'm sure you could be really depressing.
There's no signs of violence. No bodies, no signs of destruction.
No blood. I'd have smelled it.
Maybe the maze ate them.
Shut up, Brett. It's not just the scientists who are missing. Where are the Imperial Guards? Where are the security forces? I was expecting to have to sneak or fight our way past all kinds of defenses. But there's nothing here. Nothing to stand between us and the Madness Maze.
Except Shub. Shub will be waiting for us at the maze, you can count on that.
They said they were expecting us. They said someone told them we'd be here today. Who could have known that when we didn't even make up our minds to come here till the last minute?
What do you say to that, Oz?
Lewis waited, but there was no reply.
Let's ask Shub when we get there. I'll get some answers out of them.
You do that, and the rest of us will watch from a safe distance.